afternoon, everyone. I am so happy to be back for the second time this week. I loved our conversation earlier this week with the girls about technology, TechWise Littles, and your kids. Great questions there. I'm really interested and thrilled today to be talking to Dr. Becky. My mom actually originally sent me an article that Dr. Becky wrote that was called Dr. Becky Doesn't Think the Goal of Parenting is to Make Your Kid Happy. So my mom sent it to me. I read it and Dr. Becky and I connected, and I'm really excited to talk to her today. She's so amazing just with all the content that she posts. It's really informative as a parent and just as somebody who also is really interested in how our own childhood plays out in parenting. It is all really fascinating to me. So I'm excited to talk to her about that and also answer a lot of your guys' questions, which were some of them similar about discipline and punishment with children, and also how you can be a more aware and self-aware parent going into parenting. So because I'm 18 months in, I'm excited and interested to talk to Dr. Becky. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I was just talking about your awesome article that I was sent by my own mom, which every time I reread it, I feel like I pick up something new and different. I think probably just depending on what phase of parenting you're in. So, I'm really excited to talk to you, not only about that article, of course, but also just, there were tons of questions that people had submitted about, your thoughts on punishment and consequences, and I love watching all the videos that you post just as a new parent myself, because I think the whole idea of self-reflection and parenting is so important. So I want to get into that a little bit. But just to start, since the kind of title of the article was something that I think kind of catches people off guard, because of course, as a parent, you think that your goal is to make your child happy. Can you explain a little bit about why the goal of parenting should not be to make your child happy?
Yeah. So I think that was the interviewer chose that headline probably in part because it was attention grabbing, right? Yeah. I have telling parents what their goal should or shouldn't be. That's not exactly my style. Having said that, you know, when people say to me, like, don't you just want your kids to be happy, right? I think I'll say to them, no. And to be clear, that doesn't mean I want my kids to be miserable. Like, I'm not wishing misery on my kids either. But what we focus on our kids being happy early on, our kind of instinct then is when they're disappointed, when they're jealous, when they feel down on themselves. We're like, oh, kind of, how can I help my kid get to the happy? So my kid says, here's an example. I'm the only kid in my class who can't read yet, right? And we want to say, but you're so amazing at soccer, or but you're going to get there, right? Or when someone says, oh, it's no fair. You took my brother for ice cream and not me. Okay, fine. We'll take you to ice cream. Now you're happy. Well, let's fast forward, right? Because I think one of the things I think about a lot is, yes, we're parenting our kids today, but also we're setting the stage for how they look at the world and how they actually interact with themselves later in life. And there's a lot more years our kids are going to be out of our house than in our house. So let's fast forward. Well, always kind of looking for the happy in adulthood, we all know, is a setup for anxiety, not happiness, because anxiety in adulthood is really the experience of, I don't want to be feeling this way, get me to feel any other way. And you know what happens when you get fired from your job? It's really hard to like get to the happy. And if you haven't learned how to tolerate disappointment, you kind of have the same coping skills as a toddler does, right? Or if you haven't learned, guess what, as an adult, we still feel jealous. I feel jealous. My friend just got a new car and I can't get a new car right now. And if your mind feels like, okay, I'm not supposed to feel this way, where's the happy thought immediately? We as adults can't tolerate the range of feelings. So my goal for my kids, I can just say, is I want them to be resilient. I want them to feel like no matter what feeling comes my way, some are more pleasant than others, that's for sure, but I can deal with it. I can feel like it's okay to be me because I have kind of a sense of my own competence in hard times. And that doesn't come from focusing on happiness early on. It actually focuses on supporting our kids in a range of emotions early on.
And I think it was really interesting because in the article, you gave a couple examples of that. And also just of how we can not necessarily have our child say to us a feeling or a statement, and then obviously quickly offer them a happy or better alternative, which I think is, as a parent, a normal reaction to want to say like, oh, no, but this is great too. And I remember, you know, my parents doing that when I was growing up. But it was interesting to me because you gave an example of a child saying, you know, I don't like my sister or I don't like my brother. And instead of saying, you know, oh, we don't say that in this house, which is, and I love my mom to death, that's exactly what you know, we were told growing up, like, we don't say I hate you or anything like that. But your response was to say to them, something must have happened to make you feel that way. Can you tell me more about that, to kind of open up, which is all a very new way of parenting that my mom is always reminding me of, that this is all very new to be able to say to a child, like, okay, tell me more. Give me more about what you're feeling, how you're feeling about a certain situation, instead of saying like, no, we don't say that in this house.
I mean, Catherine, you're saying like, I feel like I can go now. So like, you can do the rest of this. Like, that's so amazing, really, in how you're describing that. And for everyone listening, right, I always picture like, with my kids, is my response going to shut them down? Or is my response gonna open them up? Right? Where if I said to my husband, you don't even care about this family. And he's like, Becky, we don't say that in our house. Like, I would be shut down. I'd be like, okay, like, you know, I'd move on, or I'd feel shut down. If he said, okay, whoa, and this would only come if he understood, okay, there's something big and important happening for Becky under those words. Like, those words aren't the truth. The feeling under those words is where the real truth lies. So if he said to me, wow, there's something that must be going on between us that feels important to you and makes you say that, as your words gather, and tell me more. Now it's like permission to learn more about this together. And I think we all know in a marriage, like, that's what we want to hear. And it doesn't mean it's okay to say that or it's not okay. That's how we understand. And when we understand, we can change.
Yeah. I mean, I think that also just the idea of just this new way of parenting. I mean, my daughter is 18 months old, so I'm very new at this, but I am constantly asking my mom for advice on pretty much everything when it comes to motherhood and parenting. And there are, I mean, and I'm sure everybody has this, there are things that when I was little that my parents did that I was like, I'm never going to do this with my children. And here I am as a parent, and I'm like, I'm absolutely going to do exactly that with my children, because there are some forms of parenting, you know, changing language, like we just talked about, that I think is amazing and great. And then there are also kind of old school forms of parenting that I felt I responded to, but also maybe my siblings didn't necessarily respond to, because it, you know, obviously depends on the child. And one of the things that you said that people talk to you a lot about is this whole idea of discipline and consequences, and how you don't believe in that. You talked about it in the article a little bit, but can you talk to, I'm curious about it myself, because I responded very well to, I was a child who responded well to like, don't do this or this would happen. But I know that doesn't work for every child.
Yeah. So what I want to, yeah. So I guess what I'll start with is, I don't think there's anything about my parenting approach that's like soft, right? So I think it often feels like, oh, are you not for consequences and discipline? Is it just like anything goes, right? I think often as humans, we think, oh, if it's not this, it has to be this, right? And that's really not my approach at all, right? So I think there's a way we can be very firm, not scary, firm, and look at what our kids need to change. And to me, that's very different than anything fear-based, right? So let's take a situation. I don't know, throw one out there, Catherine, something maybe someone asked about, like, what's a situation that we feel like traditionally someone would say, perfect situation for like a punishment, or if you do that again, here's what's going to happen.
Thank you.
Well, a lot of parents wrote in saying, how do you respond to children kicking, screaming, and hitting without following up with consequences?
Perfect. Okay. So a really core belief I have, and it goes to this name good inside, is that people are fundamentally good inside, and meaning we are all always doing the best we can with the resources we have available in that moment. I firmly believe that. So let's say it's my 18-month-old or it's my 3-year-old, and I say some version of, I don't know, no, we're not having a snack before dinner or something like that. And they start, you know, flailing, or maybe they even kick me or they hit me, mommy, I hate you. I don't know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think one of the most important questions to ask, what's going on here? Like, what is really going on? And I'm a big fan of visuals and metaphors, and I really think the idea of an iceberg helps so much. The kick or the hit is the tip of the iceberg, right? And yet we all know from the story of the Titanic and many other things, like, the problem was never the tip of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg isn't the issue. The issue is the mass that is underneath, mm-hmm. underneath a kid's bad behavior. Is a whole host of feelings and urges and things that have not yet learned to be managed. And so I think it's really powerful to think when a kid kicks, it's a sign to me that a kid's feeling overpowered their ability to manage those feelings. So as a pragmatist, I think, well, how do I change? I'm not teaching my kid anything by punishing them. I'm adding fear. Okay. But kids change by learning new skills. Like if I was playing basketball and I couldn't make a layup, I can't imagine if my coach punished me, I would be like better at making a layup. Mm-hmm. My coach would probably be like, hey, let's go to the gym. Let's practice. Right. And that's where I think this difference in approach is really, really key. Because when we punish a child, a couple things happen. Go to your room, a timeout, or if you kick me again, you're going to lose dessert tonight. Okay. There's no skill building. Like, it kind of has the assumption that a kid could have done better, meaning like, they're doing this to me. And also, what we end up doing is we essentially reflect back to our kid, like, you're a bad kid, because only bad people get punishments. And kids who are struggling, arguably the thing that gets in their way of change more than anything else is that they feel like a bad kid inside. Mm-hmm. So now I'm, as a parent, reflecting this to my kid. I'm not teaching them anything. I'm adding fear. So to me, it's not about like, it's just about effectiveness. I just like, how is that a recipe for change? I don't know anyone who said, you know, I'm going to help my employee get better. I'm going to send them away and not teach them new things and make them scared of me. Like, I just can't imagine anyone would be like, I want to work at that company. Right?
Right. I mean, when it comes to like, you know, let's say two kids having a situation together at preschool, kindergarten, whatever, on a play date, one kid hits another kid or throws a toy at another kid.
Yes.
Obviously, myself, my instinct would be like, okay, let's take the toy away. You've lost your privileges with the toy. You know, you've hurt so-and-so, et cetera. Is that not the correct way to respond?
No. And just like, and again, correct. Like I feel very strongly about like the things I believe in, and I know there's not a right way. So I don't know. So people talk about like natural consequences a lot. That's a natural consequence, right? So that's a good example I'll walk through, right? I don't love the word consequence just because what I think as a parent is more important than any strategy is just noticing the way I'm thinking about things with my kid and the language I'm using. Does it make me look at my kid like they're a good kid having a hard time or like they're kind of a bad kid doing bad things? Does it make me like my kid or does it make me dislike my kid? This mm-hmm. is Catherine. And when I think about, I got to give my son a consequence. Like, I don't like someone. I don't like him. I'm just like, I feel like I got, like, I'm doing something to you. I'm like controlling you.
Right.
What I think as like our job, I like to ground ourselves in family jobs. It's like one of the key things I talk about in one of my like big foundational courses, because parents say, okay, if I'm not doing that, what am I doing? And we need to know, and we need to know our job. So I actually think we have like these three main jobs as parents: and boundaries, validation, and empathy. Boundaries are both decisions we make, and they're actually things we do to keep our kids safe. So in that situation, better even than waiting till the block is thrown is knowing, oh, I see my son and I kind of know the things he does right before the throw. Yeah, I'm going to go over there. I'm not going to say, oh, he's mad. Let in the feelings. Feelings are so amazing. No, that's like, no. So I'd walk over and I'd say this phrase. And this phrase to me should be in every parent's toolbox. I won't let you. I won't let you throw. And I would actually take the block out of their hand, right? Could I say instead, you've lost the privilege, right? I could say that. There's nothing like, I'm not damaging my kid. Right. But I go back to that idea of, I am reflecting back to my kid who they are. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. That's from an attachment lens. There's this amazingly powerful phrase I keep reading about is, I am as you see me. Our kids feel inside as their parents see them. So what would feel better for me to hear from my partner? Becky, you've lost the privilege. You're throwing the remote control. You've lost the privilege to have it. Or, you know, Becky, I'm not going to let you throw that because that's not safe and I'm going to help you. Like, I can just say for me, the second feels like my husband likes me and the other one feels like my husband's judging me.
Yeah. I mean, touching on the soft parenting thing, because there's a ton of I feel like conversation, especially in the past year or so about soft parenting. And I agree that what you're saying about your parenting is really just giving you different language tools on how to communicate things. And of course, the idea of being firm, but not instilling fear, that's something that I look at my mom, and my mom did remarkably well. Like, yeah. She was not scary, but she was firm. And I knew that, like, I didn't want to get in trouble because she was firm and clear with her boundaries. Like, this is respectful, you know, and she, to me, I always knew very clearly what her expectations were, what was right from wrong. And of course I, you know, messed up several times, but the way that it was handled was, you know, firm, but not like fearful. When my mom did get mad, I was fearful, but it was, but she was really good at being firm. But I think that this idea, and this is something that I think I hear a lot of dads talking about as well. And especially as my daughter starts playing with other kids and I see how people's parenting is different and also changing, is this idea of soft parenting. And we're raising soft kids. We're raising, you know, kids to be too in touch with their feelings. And, you know, if we don't follow up with discipline and consequences, then, you know, we're just going to have all of these kids that are, you know, emotional and soft and relying on their parents, et cetera. What is your response to that? Because you just said your form of parenting and your advice on parenting is not soft parenting.
Yes, you've gotten me fired up. I'm ready to take this on. No. So first of all, as humans, as animals, okay, we feel before we think. That is just a biological truth. We are bodies of sensation. So feelings have gotten this really odd rap for like being soft. Like, you feel before you think. It's just science that feelings matter. They are the start of a circuit. So I always say, if we're trying to solve an issue that ends with bad behavior, it makes sense to look where that pathway starts. And pathways that end in bad behavior start at feelings. And feelings only become bad behavior because kids come into the world fully able to feel and not at all able to manage their feelings. They have all the feelings and none of the skills. It's like this insanely inconvenient truth. So what we do early on is think, oh, bad feelings, don't pay attention to the feelings. The feelings aren't the problem. The lack of skills to handle the feelings are the problem, right? Mm-hmm. That's the issue. And if we don't pay attention to the feelings, well, you can't ever learn to regulate a feeling that you don't allow yourself to have. So paying attention to feelings, to me, like I would say this to anyone, it is not soft, it is effective. Feelings manifest as hits, as screams in adults, as road rage, as whatever else, right? Because people haven't learned emotion regulation skills. I see people saying, what skills? Noticing a feeling, greeting a feeling, talking to a feeling, deep breathing, practicing having feelings, literally, I do this with my kids all the time when they're young. Oh, your friend's about to come over. What's it going to be like when she wants to play with your Magna tiles? Let's be honest. That's really hard, right? Let's practice. And if your friend and I know your favorite color is red, I'm going to take some of the red ones. Oh, what can you do? And I'll say this to my kids. Is it okay to be mad about that? Yes. Anger isn't problematic. Dysregulated anger is problematic. Mm-hmm. And so what can you do when you're mad? Maybe we practice backing our bodies away. So a kid learns to put space instead of hit. Maybe we practice taking a deep breath. Maybe we practice saying, I'm mad, mad, mad. Now my kid has a play date. They're able to manage because I've coached them, mm-hmm. right? So I think this idea of paying attention to feelings, people have a very either or perspective. Paying attention to feelings doesn't mean any feeling go. I don't watch my kid on a play date and say like, well, right again, like there goes the anger, right? It's what allows us to build skills, which in my mind is a sign of competence.
Just because you mentioned playdates, when it comes to sharing and playdates and teaching that, I was recently in a situation where I was with my daughter and a couple other kids. And I have three younger siblings. So sharing to me was something as the oldest, you know, that was, you're sharing your doll with your sister, you're going to share this with your brother. And to me, again, me personally, I'm an adult now. I love sharing. I love like having my sister borrow anything that she wants to borrow and, you know, whoever. And I know that, again, doesn't work for everybody. But I was told then by somebody else, don't tell your kid to share. Don't say, you know, okay, you know, can you let so-and-so hold your doll now? Let's share. Let's hold your doll. And to me, my daughter is 18 months old and she's very generous by nature anyway. But I see kids who are not necessarily generous by nature. And as a mom, you want to be like, okay, let's share, you know, let's all share together. But apparently now I'm learning that's not the correct to be teaching sharing.
Well, look, I think, you know, to me with sharing, there's no, again, there's not like one right way, but sharing is like a really tricky thing that we put on kids, right? Because to me, what I would worry about in a kid is the kid who never shares and right. the kid who always shares. The kid who's like, you seem to want my stuffed animal, here you go, mm-hmm. versus like, well, I want my stuffed animal, at least right now. Or the kid who says, I will, like, no matter what you touch around me, no, 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 no. I think the extremes are a problem. But there's a couple key things around sharing. Number one, and I think about this, like, if I was reading a book and you even came over to my house, you're like, Becky, can I have your book? Like, I probably would be like, I'm reading it now. Like, or, you know, I think you like your husband. If your friend was like, I would like to share him, you might be like, well, like, I don't think I'm going to do that. Right. And that doesn't make you like a bad person. Right? Right. So we judge things in our kids that we give ourselves like a lot of permission for. Mm-hmm. And there's also an irony that the more a kid is forced to share, you have to share now, your time is up, the more possessive they can become because they feel like at any point something could be taken away from me, right? Same thing. If I felt like every time you came over, you like people pressured me to give you, for me to give you my book. When you came over, I think we both know I would hide my book. I would hide it, right?
So correct language then if you have a child who, you know, who doesn't yes. want to share, how do you communicate that well?
So I think number one, I would tell kids, sometimes it's okay to share and it's okay not to share, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think that's something kids should hear. It's okay to share and it's okay not to share, right? We don't make any great intervention with a kid when they're having a hard time. A kid who's refusing to share, like you just got to get through that moment. I would think about it outside the moment, again, with that preparation. Your friends are coming over. What's it going to be like when they want to use your toy? Is there any toy that you find so hard to share that you put away? Okay, let's put that one away. Still, it might be hard with this. What could we do, right? If a kid is really, really doubling down, right? I think as a parent, we honestly, going back to how you started, Catherine, like, what would I tell someone to do? I'd say, check in with yourself. You know why it's usually so hard for a parent? They fast forwarded 30 years of their kid's life. Like 2 years old, not sharing their truck. And you are projecting that they are like, you know, have no friends and are like never invited to anything and are like hoarding newspapers. And they're, I don't even know, like we like fast forward our kid's life. So yeah. I would say like, give yourself permission to be like, let me pay attention to now. Mm-hmm. Name what's happening. What would I say to my kid? Something about sharing feels really hard right now. Mm-hmm. If it was hoarding, like every, I would probably say this. Oh, it seems like there's nothing that feels good to share. Your cousin is here. Your friend is here. I know this isn't going to feel great. I'm going to help you. These blocks, I'm going to let him play with, and I'm going to sit with you right here. If it's too hard, take them out of the room, whatever. See, that's the big difference between me embodying my authority as a parent. Mm-hmm. I'm going to help you here versus you have to give them. You have to give them. Why aren't you? We put things on our kids that they're already obviously locked in shame and stress. They can't manage. So that's where, again, this isn't gentle. I'm looking at my kid like they're still a good kid. And then I am the one embodying my own authority as the adult to help my kid out of like a really tricky situation.
And is when it comes to sharing, let's say you have kids together and they're fighting over one toy, is the idea of each having their own time with the toy, is that something that is appropriate to be doing, or what is the kind of right way to be handling with two different kids, obviously, who are maybe are from two different households that are parented differently? But you also, because what I find myself, and I know that my my sister also will feel this way, and she's like a very involved auntie, is like, you know, if that kid's not sharing with her, why is, like, I want that kid to share with her. If that kid's not sharing ever with her, then what is that teaching her? Is that making her feel bad about herself or sad? So you do start projecting this kind of like view, like you're saying, of, is she going to feel left out? Is she, you know, and how do you handle that with two kids that are maybe not siblings, but are on a play date or at a playground and they both want to be holding the same Elsa doll?
So I can't help myself in these moments. And I just do. I always fast forward to the arc of like, well, what do I want my kids to be able to learn down the line? And of course, it doesn't happen in a moment, but I want to intervene as much as I can. I mean, sometimes I'm like, forget it. I just go in and fix it, right? Because I can't handle it. Yeah. But if on my game that day and I have the energy, I'd probably think like, well, you know what? One day my kid is going to, you know, I don't know, be shopping with a friend and they're going to want one. There's only one t-shirt. They both want to get it. Like, you know, what's not going to happen. There's not going to be an adult who's like, well, why don't you wear it for 1 week and then ship it to your friend? Like that's not how life works, right? Right. So what's the skill is slowing down actually and showing your kids or both friends that they probably have problem solving skills themselves if we can get them to a regulated place. So what I do, and I'm going to use my seltzer can, maybe they're fighting over the seltzer. I'd probably come in, especially if it was like really heated, and I take it myself for a moment. I'd say something like this. Whoa, I see two kids and one seltzer can. Let me see if I got this right. And I'm going to actually model this because like what I'm doing is narrating. And I'm going to narrate in a way where even my pace and my slowness helps to regulate a kid, because when two people are regulated, they can make good decisions. Okay, two kids, one seltzer can. Let me see if I got this right. You came and saw the seltzer and you really, really wanted the Elsa doll. Okay, wait. And you also love Elsa. I have two kids who love Elsa and one Elsa doll. Okay, wait a second. I also have two kids who are really good problem solvers. Okay, I wonder if anyone has an idea of what we could do. Now, if this isn't my practice, a parent would be like, Becky, you really think I'm going to do that? You really think I'm going to do that? And this is what I'll say. I literally don't care if you do that. I'm not there. Handle everyone. Handle it. My life isn't impacted. Do you want to handle it in a way that you're going to actually be building the skill of independent problem solving? Or do you want to lock yourself into forever the role of your kid, even when they're eight, saying, hey, mom, we can't figure out who gets the red marker. Like, I don't want that for myself, right? And when you do this and you don't take sides, because again, you have two good kids, not there's no one bad, kids will say, maybe they can take it before me. And if the fighting continues, in the worst case, I'd probably say this, seems like you guys can't come up with a great solution right now. That happens to me sometimes too. I am going to hold the doll myself until you two figure it out, because there's just not a safe way right now to figure this out. And that is my out. Now, on a not great day, which happens to me all the time, I would do this. 5 minutes for you, 5 minutes for you. And then I tell myself, I hope I have more energy next time to do something that's going to be more productive in the long run.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think, you know, and you talked about this in your article, is this idea of when you're parenting, or if your child is having a moment or a tantrum, that you can project to who they will be in the future, but also you start thinking about things that might be triggers for you and for your own childhood experience, and or even you as an adult now. And if it's, you know, feeling your child feeling left out, and then you think like, oh, I always felt left out, and that plays a role, and always making sure that as a parent that you check in with yourself in those moments so you don't have trigger situations and release that onto your child.
I mean, this is everything, right? I feel like, you know, when we have kids, subconsciously, we feel like, I think I might have said this in the article, I don't know, but like, I feel like subconsciously we think our kids are going to heal us, and our kids trigger us. And a trigger in a kid, right, is when we see something in a kid, our kid, that we really had to learn to shut down in ourselves. So the sharing example is a good one. I feel like I'm a recovering people pleaser, still in long-term recovery. But I was definitely raised to be like a good girl. And if my mom's watching too, mom, I love you. You know, I do. And we talk about this a lot, that like a lot of us, and I talk about this at Good Inside with the people working here a lot of us are raised to be good girls. And what is a good girl? A good girl is someone who pays more attention to what others want of her than what she wants for herself. And so you get very distant from your own wants and needs because you kind of learn that my relationships would be better if I didn't pay so much attention to them and paid attention to others' needs. So if I was raised to be a good girl, okay, my kid not sharing is going to really trigger me, because a kid who doesn't share essentially says, I want that. I want it. I don't care about what you want from me. I want this for me. And if I was raised to shut down that part of myself and always be like, oh, look how much kind of praise and smiles I get when I say, no, you can have that doll. No, it's okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Then I am going to be triggered probably from my daughter who's like, no, I don't think so. Right? Yeah. You think, wait, like, I actually feel like that's a good thing on some level. Right? And so knowing that, and actually, if everyone here, when you take this to the next level, like if you think about the thing that triggers you in your kid, right? I think one of the things that triggers me is my older son, like he just does not take no for an answer. He always has an argument. And I think it goes back to my good girl days of when my parents would say, oh, Becky, no sleepover tonight. And then it was probably like, oh, okay, well, you did let me miss, right? Instead of being like, wait, I still want one, right?
Yeah.
Well, instead of looking to shut that down in him, what's wrong with you? I said no, you know, whatever I would say. When we grow the part of ourselves that we get triggered in our kid, in some way we become a little bit more like that part of them, we don't get triggered as much. So right. For those who get triggered by sharing, it's probably a good time to be like, today I'm going to say no to someone. No, I can't have that meeting. No, you can't have some of my sandwich. I'm eating it. And guess what? Like, we actually become less triggered by our kids when we in some ways like tap into a little bit that part of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of a book that I was told about called Growing Yourself Back Up, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, all about that, and was recommended when I was pregnant to read, you know, before you have a child, because your children are, you know, amazing and beautiful creations. And also you will find yourself in situations, especially as they get older, where you do feel triggered about your own childhood or your own family dynamic or whatever the situation is, and that might, you know, come out in unbecoming ways at times. Yeah. You do the work to kind of make yourself aware of them.
Definitely. I think that's exactly right. You know, like I would say, like, I feel like I've learned so much more from my kids than I've taught them, you know, like we learned so much about ourselves and our yeah. partners about them.
I mean, there were so many questions just about, yeah. you know, so many different forms of how to deal with this, how to deal with that. And I know that we're ending on time, so I won't be able to get to them. But I think one of the big things that I think my mom talks a lot about, especially as, you know, my siblings and I have gotten older, and a lot of people have asked about toddler temper tantrums and also how to deal with a 9-year-old or a 15-year-old and having a temper tantrum. And my mom always talks to us kids about, you know, your parenting changing and how you parent changes as you get older, or as your kids get older. And what would you say, I mean, is that true? Does your parenting change? And from your child, obviously being a 2-year-old versus, or 2-year-old to a 9-year-old, how can your parenting evolve and change as your child gets older?
Yeah. You know, I think, and I say this a lot, but my true response here is, like, I feel like two things are true. That to me, when I think about parenting, like everything I even talk about on Instagram or in my workshops or my podcast, like I really do feel like there's like 10 or so principles that like ground me. And those mm-hmm. are the same, right? Because like, I really do believe babies, toddlers, teenagers, adults, we all need the same things. Like we all want to feel seen. We're all looking to be believed in our experience. We all want to be understood, right? Like we all need some amount of connection. And so how that manifests in the early days, in toddlerhood and so on, definitely changes. So I feel like that's important to hold on to. Like, what are the things I hope for my kids over the years? And then how would that look with where my kid is now? And of course, with my, you know, kid and their individual temperament, kids need so many different things. So I think as kids get older, right, you're giving them hopefully more and more independence, right? I think there's ways we can even do that when our kids are really young also. But I actually find it very heartening to know that, like, to some degree, and we said this early, someone wrote this earlier in the comment, like, wow, there's so much of this that's useful in like my partnership, that it really, there's something nice about being like, wait, when I'm working on how I relate to myself and my kids, my partnership, someone at work, like, I actually can get a lot of bang for my buck by thinking about those like core principles, because it really extends throughout mm-hmm. so many situations.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of parenting, and then we'll kind of wrap up, but when it comes to parenting, if you are, you know, in a situation where you have very different views of discipline, consequence, kind of things that you maybe grew up, that your backgrounds are different. Somebody wrote in about spanking specifically, you know, their partner felt like it was good for them. They felt like it was obviously not good. When you are in a situation like that, where you are not on the same page as your partner, you have two very different backgrounds or beliefs on certain things when it comes to parenting, how can you handle that?
Yeah. So this comes up a lot, of course, in all the things I talk about with parenting. And often, you know, someone will say to me, like, can I meet like with you and my partner? And can you just like convince them why like they're wrong? Basically, you know? And I'm like, I don't do that. Like, do yeah. I look, you know? But the reason I don't do that is because when that's really happening, it's really not a parenting discussion. It's a couple's communication issue. And I think the larger point, and I see your mom weighing in here with some sage advice, that the larger point is, what is it like for me and my partner to communicate about things we both care about and really disagree about, mm-hmm. right? And if that's a problem, it's going to be a problem in parenting styles. It's going to be a problem in lots of things, right? And that is really, I think, a core thing to think about. I think as a starting point, what I would say is there's an irony that the more we really understand each other, the more we're able actually to resolve differences. That when someone gets locked down and doesn't consider someone else's difference, it's often because they feel like no one's trying to understand them. They feel really unseen. So if you have a partner with a really different parenting style, the starting point isn't look at this research or look at this video, look at why you're wrong. Mm-hmm. The starting point is really, hey, you know what? I feel like every time we talk about parenting, and I'm like this too, like I'm trying to convince you why you're wrong and you're trying to convince me why I'm wrong. And I realized that's just never a good formula to talk about anything and have movement.
Right.
Let's do something different. How about for 5 minutes, you tell me about what you want for our kids and how you think they're going to get there. And I promise all I'm going to do is ask questions. And my goal is to end the conversation just saying to myself, I understand my partner way better than I did before. And then we'll switch for 5 minutes. And a couple of say to me, but like, how does that solve the problem? It is the foundation for solving the problem, is understanding each other. And that has to be the starting point.
Yeah. My mom's saying, tell me about what's really going on in your life. I think that that's something that also, you know, is, and my mom has also talked to us kids about this, is that it's always really great to be able to have these conversations with your significant other, maybe before you have kids, just to get aligned with how you might want a parent. And also, you know, as you've said many times in this conversation, you know, people carry around things from their own childhood that comes out with their kids as they parent. So getting a better idea of your partner's childhood experiences that maybe you weren't aware of might also give you empathy and compassion for that little version of your significant other, that might make certain things about parenting that were really frustrating or anger causing for you, you might be able to look at them in a little bit of a different light with more empathy and tenderness. And I've found that to be very helpful just in our own parenting, and also seeing my parents as grandparents. Like it's a very fascinating way of looking at people, and also understanding people's childhood experiences, which, you know, you understand your siblings' childhood experiences, but when you marry somebody or even your parents, like you don't know what their childhood was like. And having tenderness towards that, I think is really helpful.
It's huge. And, you know, I always think when you have a kid with someone, and if you're co-parenting with them, you watch their childhood unfold through the way they parent. Because people will say to me, well, I don't remember how my parents responded to my tantrum. And I'll say, okay, memory defined by like what you remember with words is so limited, because we only remember what with words, the things that were put together coherently for us. Like, mm-hmm. We watched you have basically an adult temper tantrum in reaction to your child's temper tantrum. Like, you could not tolerate it. That is everything I need to know as a psychologist about how your parents handled it. Not because they were bad people, but if you have no tolerance for that and you react and get so angry, that is your memory living itself out. And so that happens in such a powerful way when you have kids. You learn everything about how your partner was raised. And hopefully that can then translate into talking about it. Yes, we have to know how our partners were raised to have the full picture, right? Yeah. One last thing I'll say on this is, it's always interesting, is that, you know, I've put together, I don't even know, 15, 20 different workshops all about parenting and adulthood and different things. And parents always say to me, like, where do I start? And I usually say the reparenting workshop, or I'll say, or if you're having troubles in your partnership, the couples communication workshop. And they always are like, no, I think you misheard me. Like, which parenting workshop do I start with? Uh-huh. And I'm like, no, like I did hear you. And that's like, we have to start with the way we relate to ourselves if we want to give something a little bit different to our kids. Like it, and then also when we change, yeah, we can show up differently for our kids, but we also feel more confident and more confident and more grounded just in other areas of our life also, right? That's how we really change, not by just trying out a new strategy, but by that foundation of, like you said from the start, that like self-reflection.
Yeah. It's also interesting. I mean, I can sit here and talk to you for literally hours because this is like so fascinating to me. So maybe we'll come back and do another one, because I have awesome questions below, which I also love. But thank you so much. I mean, this is all so fascinating, as someone who's a new parent and also just really eager to learn so much. I have the fondest, most amazing memories of my childhood, and also as I am into adulthood, of my parents parenting me. So I definitely have a well of wisdom there, but I think just, you know, learning about new ways of parenting, and also, you know, really informative things like in this article, and also, of course, your podcast, your Instagram page, all the workshops that you have. It's all just so helpful to be able to have those as resources and tools and also help with our own self-awareness as people that has nothing to do necessarily with our children, but also just, you know, being in a good place with ourselves. So thank you so, so much. I'm so grateful. This was so much awesome information. And I'm really grateful you took the time because I know you're crazy busy. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Talk to you soon.
We will link the article because a couple people were talking about the article and also just like all of your information. So we'll make sure to link all that for all of you guys watching. Who
Aaron, you're here. You could have spent the time doing anything. And this is like an intense, serious conversation in the world. All of you for tolerating it. So thank you.
Well, you're helping all of us parents, Becky. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Catherine. Talk to you soon.
Bye.